Welcome, everyone, to the latest installment of the MP Access Podcast. My name is David Wharton. I'm the editor-in-chief of Mortgage Point and the Five Star Institute. Joining us today, we have an economist that works with the housing market and the industry on a regular basis. You've probably seen her speaking on news programs or seen her quoted in some of the reports if you follow those things. Please welcome to the show today, Dr. Selma Hepp of Cotality. Selma, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So to get us started, I wanted to back up a little bit into kind of how you got to where you are, and then we'll dive into more of the nitty-gritty questions about what you do and the data you look at. So could you tell us a little bit about how you began your journey into economics and what led you to this role specifically and to your knowledge and your interest in housing market economy and what you deal with every day?
Yeah, so in all honesty, it's kind of scary to me to admit, but that most of my career has been in housing economics, even though that was never the intent. You know, when I was young, I guess I wanted to be, related, an architect, or you know, I was always very fascinated with how urban areas grow, like what makes one urban area more attractive than another urban area. You know, I grew up in Europe, and you know, we have very a lot of our life, it's outside our homes, a little bit more so maybe than what I'm experiencing right now, unless more sort of social settings in public spaces, right? So fast forward, I did my schooling in actually business and economics, and you know, it wasn't until my PhD that I actually started focusing on urban environment, you know, and this was particularly during the great financial crisis, leading into financial crisis era, and determining how cities have changed from 70s to 80s into the early 2000s. So that was how I landed my first job with NAR. I was working on my PhD and that was at HUD. I was a special assistant and doing some that was actually part of the work that I did at HUD was also something that I used in my PhD dissertation. And then from there, I went to NAR. In the meantime, actually, I did also have a real estate license. So I knew a little bit about, you know, dealings of real estate agents and just, just how housing transactions work and all of that. Purely academic. At NAR, I just learned a lot about, you know, what matters to real estate agents, what matters to, in terms of reporting the data, what data points drive markets or drive people's decisions to enter the market or, you know, make a change in their life in terms of the housing options. And then just it went from there. I went to California Association of Realtors, and Trulia and Pacific Union, and now I'm Cotality. And so it's all been about housing market dynamics through different lenses, through different actors in the housing market.
Well, I know one of the big stories that has continued to be discussed is the divergence between housing prices and demand and inventory that's available. And I know you've talked about that. Could you talk a little bit about, are we seeing any changes on that front, any shifts, or is it continuing to be that same story of there's just not enough houses, or at least not enough houses at the price points where there's demand to kind of solve that problem?
You know, it all matters. Inventory matters. Affordability matters. It matters geographically where you're located. We have to always go back to the fact that pandemic brought on a huge dislocation in the housing market. And we saw really trends, you know, move away from where we were, you know, where we were at prior to the pandemic or where we were historically in terms of how housing markets moved. And so we saw a huge demand coming into the housing market and really the value of home change in terms of it was not just your shelter, but it was your place of doing everything, right?
Right.
Okay, so Fast forward now to where we are today. We do have, and I say that because, why the importance of housing making a different value to a household, because it impacts what's happening currently in the housing market. So people are not as easily moving out or moving elsewhere because so much has changed in sense of, how we conduct our life. Inventory has improved, from where we were in 2023. We basically bottomed out in 2023 in terms of inventory, and there was a long way up from there, long and slow way up. And we thought that as soon as we got more inventory, we would see more home sales, but that didn't turn out to be the case. We actually did have quite a bit of increase in inventory. Now, geographically, that varies very much, but we did see it in some markets, but we didn't see a commensurate increase in home sales, because what happened was, again, this dislocation, and this time I'm referring to affordability, just what happened to affordability. So now we are challenged with this affordability challenge. Again, that's different depending where you are in a country. There are multiple things going on at the moment, and I think that's what's okay, to give you another example in terms of home sales activity. We were flat essentially in 2024, 2025, but some markets flat nationally, but some markets actually did better than the in 2025 versus 2024, while some markets contracted quite a bit. And it was really contraction of the markets that were really strong during the pandemic and post-pandemic that's keeping this overall level flat. And I'm specifically thinking of Florida, Southeast Texas markets that just saw a huge contraction in home sales activity. So I know this is a long round way of answering the question. I don't even know if I answered your question exactly. What
No, I think you did. Well, looking kind of continuing along that same track, would you say that right now the U.S. housing market, is it shifting more towards a buyer's market yet, or is it still too early to say? And how do you think that will play out over the next, 12 months or so, based on what you're seeing?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I get that a lot, actually. And people were, I've seen some articles saying that the housing market has become a buyer's market. Now, okay, we all have different definitions. There's no like a formal definition of what the buyer's market is. To me, a buyer's market is when, I have multiple options and I don't have to necessarily bid up against other buyers or other bidders significantly above what my asking price is, and maybe in return I actually get some concessions, like I get some things waived, I get some reduction in my payment, my closing costs, whatever the case may be, inspection costs. So to me that's a buyer's market, but I don't think we see that universally across the regions in the US. You do have a little bit more buyer leverage in markets where there is more inventory and where maybe demand has come down from other buyers, but there are still kind of parts of the country where you're bidding against multiple other bidders. You're having to pay above the asking price. There's very few options. So I don't know that nationally we're looking at the buyer's market, but maybe there are parts of the country where there is where buyers have greater leverage.
Well, you've touched on the regional nature of the markets a couple times now, and just how, it's not one market, it's, 100 markets operating with different factors and stuff like that. So that being said, looking at what's happening nationally, are there any markets where you're seeing anything that's particularly interesting or unexpected? Are there markets that you're watching just to kind of see what happens next? Which are the ones that are most intriguing, and what are you seeing happening right now?
I because I live in California, I have, it's my heart is geared, to is focused on what things that are happening in California. And so one interesting thing, for example, is San Francisco. San Francisco is on a rebound now after many years, actually. And it's AI that's driving that, so again, it's some new technology, whether it was dot-com, many years ago, or or forgot where we've been since then, but some new technology. So San Francisco is coming back. The other interesting thing is, and this is goes all the way back to my dissertation, is how people value being closer to urban versus suburban versus exurban areas, right? So we all, went away from the cities during the pandemic, but now you see people coming closer to the metro areas again, because we value the proximity to urban amenities. We value being social, restaurants, music scene, and things like that. So it's again interesting to see that, you have these waves, maybe it's a 10, maybe it's 20-year waves of moving away and back to the city, way and back to the city, So, always something very interesting to me personally. But regarding, specific regions, I think, I mean, it's interesting to keep an eye on Florida. Florida has gotten a lot of bad rap over the last few years because, well, insurance costs being one driver, the slowdown in the number of people moving into the state has also had a, dampening effect on housing demand and hence home prices. But you see that stabilizing again, right? We see, and this is only incremental and, maybe month to month, but over the few months, last few months, we do see some stabilization in home prices in Florida. So does that market come back? How much does it come back? I mean, at the end of all of this, what's interesting to observe is, how much home price changes are really reflective of underlying fundamental changes in the housing market. And what I mean by that is, over the last 5 years, we saw a huge surge in home prices in some markets, and the market became overvalued, right? And to the extent where local households could no longer afford to, buy or live in that market, and prices had to adjust unless you keep having these high income households come into your housing markets. But if that slows down, house prices adjust. And that's what we saw in Florida. Florida is one example, Austin, another example. But those two areas sort of stand out in terms of the reset in home prices since the onset of the pandemic. Then you have Midwest. Midwest is an interesting story now because it's seen a boom in home buying demand from influx of healthcare jobs, biotech jobs, Ozempic, for example. It's not just about, like, how big your seat on your plane is going to be, but it's like, where are those biotech jobs and what's good, how they're going to drive housing demand in certain parts of the country. So Midwest benefiting from that, for example. There is a story for each region that, like, it's interesting to me.
Well, you mentioned Florida in particular with like the insurance prices, and that for a while had been driving people, or at least slowing migration inward. How are you seeing those trends play out with? Because the insurance issue is obviously it's kind of in a lot of places that are subject to extreme weather. I know I'd heard talk about it, in California after the wildfires a couple of years ago. How are you seeing that insurance factor play out? Or is it continuing to be an issue, or is it kind of like you seem to be describing with Florida? Is it like spiking a problem and then kind of stabilizing at some point? And how do you expect that to play out? Because it's a problem that I don't know anyone's really figured out a solution for yet. So I'm curious what the data is showing.
Excellent question. I think what happened in terms of the insurance crisis really highlighted how unprepared we were for the impacts of changing, weather patterns. And so and the fact that risk, it has been so underpriced actually for so long.
Right.
And now that we are pricing that risk at more realistic, levels, it tells people, maybe you should think about, whether you want to live there long term, because can you afford? Really, it's not whether you want. I mean, who wouldn't want to live, front beach on in Florida, but
Sure.
whether you can afford it, and then whether you're, dealing with persistent natural disasters year after year in some areas. Some areas are more prone to these natural disasters, so they're going to see them. So you have to now start thinking more sort of realistically about that. So I think, I think it's really, again, the crisis is still there because we really haven't quite figured out how to effectively price in risk without, really there being a detrimental impact on like lower income communities, for example, or just areas where now you have all this construction that has occurred, and then what do you do with that? Like New Orleans, for example, we never, at times we talked about moving New Orleans elsewhere, but we didn't. We reinforced it. We hardened the infrastructure. And so I think we are at this point right now where we are thinking about how hardening infrastructure can help us offset some of this risk as well as rising costs.
Well, circling back to affordability, from a policy perspective, there have been a lot of policy suggestions over the years, certainly a lot in recent months, trying to tackle that problem of how to make housing more affordable, how to get more people have access to home ownership or even being able to afford rent prices and stuff like that. Are there certain policy suggestions or plans that have been put out that, just based on what you see in the data, you think would potentially work better than others? I know we just spoke with Ed Pino and had a whole long conversation about zoning reform and essentially the prospect of, why is the default the single family lot with a bunch of land as opposed to putting more people in that land, with a duplex or a triplex or whatever. So I'm curious what your perspective is on that.
I mean, absolutely. I agree with that perspective in terms of removing some of the unnecessary burdens to to construction. And zoning has always been, I mean, this is another sort of almost I there's a little bit of irony there, because back, when I was in school, X many years ago, we were talking about this problem then. We were
Yeah.
talking about how do and so this is not something like we have been, dealing with this issue for a long time. I think the problem is that it's so d fragmented, because it is at the local level. And really, honestly, who is the biggest obstacle to construction is the current residents. Right, it's the NIMBYism, and I experience that every day. Like, LA needs so much more housing, but God forbid you propose like a multifamily unit on a corner of two big intersections, where one wouldn't think that it would matter that much. But maybe, I don't mean to make a light of this, because it really is a difficult problem. But just that cutting the red tape is the biggest help to building to providing a supply that we can do, so building, so cutting red tape in terms of, maybe removing some of the environmental rules that have become overburdening, and also that, some of these NIMBYism groups use to prevent new construction. You could also have sort of, by right, density infill development. I'm a huge fan of infill development. So some by right infill development, some standardized type of buildings that can be put on, on these infill lots, using maybe public land that is in urban areas. Don't think we should be using public land that's not been urbanized, because that's actually going to cost a lot more. But using, city, local government, land, for infill development. But ultimately, really, what this comes back to is that you can't necessarily fix this. And there's been, so I'm shifting gears here to talk about, there's been a lot of proposals that are sort of a demand-driven proposals. 50-year mortgage, it was non-starter, but it was brought up, and it was, or it was carrying over your current mortgage, assumable mortgages and things like that. The issue really is that our housing costs have exceeded our cost of housing growth. The rate growth at which housing has increased has been much faster than income growth, and it's really incomes now that have to catch up. And it's so it's an income solution. It's not necessarily a mortgage finance solution. And I'm stealing this quote from somebody else that said that. But I think a lot of economists are sort of on the same playing field in terms of how we resolve, how we make strides towards better affordability. Yeah.
Well, obviously, at Cotality, your team works with vast swaths of data, and you produce numerous different market reports. Could you talk a little bit about how integrating diverse data sets and sources can help better inform your ability to forecast where things are headed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the beauty of working at Cotality is like you have so much data, right? You have so
Sure.
much data, and it's and the other benefit, in the world of novel technologies, you can we have this thing called CLIP number for each property. So you can layer, for one property, you can get entire history of their people who live there, mortgage and liens that were put on a property, building permits, changes to, well, a lot changes. You can have information, very detailed information about a risk, natural risk exposure. So when you're able to layer all that up on top of each other, you have a much clearer picture of what is really going on. So is the, to give an example, is it, so you notice that a mortgage buyer or mortgager or household owner, homeowner, who has a mortgage, is falling behind on their mortgage payment, right? And we can then from there see that their insurance costs, for example, tripled in the last couple of years. And that's really the part that's putting pressure on their on you know on them being able to make their mortgage payment. But then that this borrower has a lot of equity because they've been in the home for a really, really long time. And so you can sort of inform them that, so I'm talking more from like a, lender perspective, but as a economist, that's all interesting to me because I can observe what, problems are, what underlying problem is, and what the potential solution is. So this person doesn't necessarily need to leave their home. They can get, HELOC, or they can get, modification to their mortgage or something like that to help them remain in that home. So, yeah, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to be on this side of the research.
It's got to be quite a toy chest, I would imagine, to have access to all that from an economist standpoint. Well, a couple more questions, and then we'll wrap up. Is there one single misconception that you encounter that people have about the housing market, that you wish more people had a better understanding of?
There is, for example, and I brought this up with my team, and they were not particularly enthused by my argument. But I was arguing that, we talk about affordability crisis, and my point is that affordability crisis is not even everywhere. So it's not that all US has an affordability crisis. It's not, in there are parts of the country that are quite affordable. And a person with a single income can still, be able to buy a home in that market. This affordability issue is also again multi-layered, but again, it's I guess the importance of when we talk about affordability that we should really sort of break it up into areas that have extreme affordability issues and probably long-term challenges and need much long-term solution. But there are parts of the country that are quite affordable. And so we should inform people maybe of those potentials and yeah, anyway, so I know affordability is a sexy word now. And so you throw everything in the kitchen sink, but there are parts of the country again where people can afford to buy.
Well, if you had to pick one theme or word or phrase that you would use to describe your outlook for housing over the next 18 to 24 months, what do you think that would be and why?
I would say uneven.
Okay.
Uneven because it's like I said, a lot of variation across markets, across underlying fundamentals. So we're going to continue to see some markets reset a little bit more while some markets continuing to thrive. So I think again it's not one market in national, when we look at the national numbers, it's not one market, it's many different markets.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Selma. I appreciate talking to you and you sharing your insights. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this episode of the MP Access Podcast. We've had a wonderful time speaking with Dr. Selma Hepp of Cotality. And thank you again for your time, Selma.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to talking to you.
And we will see you guys next time on the next episode of the MP Access Podcast. Thanks for listening to MP Access. Stay up to date with daily mortgage news, featured stories, and our latest episodes of the podcast at themortgagepoint.com. Don't miss out, and we'll see you next week.